Now, my understanding is that dental surgery also has a presentation of English plan. That's correct.
If deemed appropriate, we will.
And why you wouldn't want to come forward? So why don't you come and join us in the front row?
That's one question. The other one you answer when you come back. And if you do have answers, then if you don't tell me, then we'll close the meeting.
Yes, we do have one.
Yes, the treasurer's input will focus mainly on the framework that was issued and later what it issued to the general.
Okay, so maybe we
should
start with the welcome to the presentation.
from your group.
Thank you, Chair. My apologies for the late coming. The main purpose for this presentation will be to focus on the question that was raised when we had a session with Growers on the need to clarify the plan for performance-based auditing that we have as an audit office. Because the current development of such that there are a number of messages that are flowing through the government with regard to performance-based auditing. And there's a need to clarify what the distinction is between those various types of performance audits. Because we do have a performance-based auditing that is linked to the regularity audit. We do have a performance audit that is linked to what we call a more specialized type of audit. And the need to... And the need to explain the difference between the two, because it is somehow giving rise to quite a number of conflicting and confusing messages to the interested parties. Now, the background to all this, fortunately, is also anchored on the development that took place in the conference of the Association of Public Health Committees, which took place in Polokwane last year, where part of their themes and resolutions, there has been a need to put together a discussion paper to clarify those two approaches to auditing performance and what the way forward should be for government to begin to make that to mature within our government. Now, Chair, maybe first and foremost before we start with the slide, just highlight how important it is for the arms of government to work actively in this regard. And one hopes that as part of this discussion, because it's quite a broad representation here, that we would be able to attach some form of a clear way forward in terms of who should be doing what going forward once the conceptually things have been clarified. But this is the main formal paper and document on this. We are hoping that we will do in as part of the APEC process if this gathering is fine with that. If that's not feasible, obviously we will still use that mechanism to bring the outcome of that to Parliament and other government structures so that we can be able to have a very clear way forward when it comes to this matter. But secondly, that's the first thing in terms of what the way forward is going to be. But secondly, is in terms of what role should each of the parties that are identified in the process play as we go forward. Because the kind of discussion planning to have today is meant primarily, if you can go to the first slide again, just demonstrating what the difference are between assessment auditing and the audit of assessment information. Clarify the role, the conceptual differences, as well as the skills requirements
the management methodology that is applied in carrying out the two types of audits. And hopefully by the end of this discussion, we'll be able to, at a conceptual level, understand and have clarity to who should be playing what role when it comes to this audit here. Now, we've prepared a slide set that is going to focus on the external audit role. But after this, we were going to also bring in the role of government. That is the legislature and the role of the executive in preparing the right platform for the auditors to begin to do what they're supposed to be doing. But first and foremost, if one looks at the role of the auditors, there's a clear distinction between the types of audits. There's a regularity audit that we perform on an annual basis. And as part of that regularity audit, we do the financial statements that are incorporated in the annual report of the department. We do look at the issues of compliance with laws and regulations, which is what we comment on as part of our report. And as a new development since the past 2 years, we also look at the audit of performance information, which is also incorporated in our reporting as part of the annual report of the department. So I just want to clarify that this audit assessment for information is an annual thing that's done as part of the annual audit that we do in the department. Okay. And it's done as part of the regularity audit by the auditors that do the regularity audit on an annual basis. Its main purpose, and I think this distinction is important at the bottom of that slide, is to confirm the credibility of the information that is contained in the annual report. That's the sole purpose of the audit of personal information, because as the Public Audit Act explains, it says that we need to provide and give the conclusion on the audit of personal information. It's a mandatory thing that we need to do on an annual basis. So it's about lending credibility to that information. I think what's also important within this context is to say that all we're looking at when we're looking at this level is to say what the department has disclosed, to what extent it's supported by the records that are contained in those departments. There's a comparison against the existing records. And against this background, there is a framework that the National Treasury, over the past 3 years, have been coordinating to define what, therefore, should be the records that should support the information that is contained in the reports that the department presents in the annual report. In addition to the records, what discipline should be observed by the department in presenting that information on an ongoing basis. And that discipline that is defined by National Treasury is what has given us an opportunity to then phase in this auditing over the years. And those phases that are important also to understand. Because we're now at a stage where we're expecting to give a conclusive opinion or conclusion on this information, let's say by 2010, if all goes well, we'll be rolled out in the public service. At the moment, we are still only commenting on whether or not departments are complying with their presentation of information with the Treasury guidelines. And essentially, it's how do departments take information from the strategic plan and report on the strategic plan on a regular basis and make sure that in the format of their reporting and the regularity between which they report, they comply with all the smart principles that National Treasury has prescribed. That's all that we're looking at the moment. But in 2 to 3 years' time, we'll be looking at much more deeper information and say, when the department confirm what they delivered in terms of their strategic plan, to what extent is that information supported by credible records that are prescribed and defined by Treasury on how departments should be presenting information? And to what extent are those records what's the paper they are written on? So that's why we link it to the industry audit, because in the industry audit, that's the manner by which we report. So I do trust that helped to position the audit of government information in that box. The statement you're making in this slide as well that says that this is an entity level evaluation, because here we're not looking at the whole of government, we're looking at just that one department, that one municipality, that one public entity, and to what extent have they presented information in a credible manner as prescribed by National Treasury. So that's the first part. For us, I think this is also important because it presents us with an opportunity to, within government, to confirm that the reporting of performance by department is respected, and it is formalized, and it is done in a manner also that it is that is consistent with standards throughout the whole of government. So that's the first part. Now, the second part is what is called the performance auditing. Now, this is where the literal term or definition of performance audit is looking at, I'll put it in the negative, is looking not only at the extent to which information is credible, but here we're looking at to what extent is this information of value, to what extent is it service delivery. The service delivery or service delivery. Okay. To what extent this service delivery has been done effectively, economically and efficiently? To what extent have we not wasted money by delivering this service? I can't think of a more simplistic way of describing it like that, and that's what the issue, principles of economy, efficiency, and effectiveness boils down to. To what extent have we not wasted money in delivering a service? And from an audit point of view, this is where, by and large, one is looking at the outcomes or the impact of the spending of money. And this is where the evaluation of this is normally done over time, because we need to provide some time before we can evaluate that the effect of the spending. Whereas on the regulatory side, this is an annual review to confirm that what people are reporting on is credible. In most instances, it's normally reported on activities rather than on impact. But here we're looking more at the impact and outcome. As it says in the slide, we also look at the evaluation of the program. We're also looking at the evaluation of the issue that the Pacific slowly left. And normally, again, how things ought to be done in comparison with that. How things should be done in comparison to the best norm, and also in comparison to the best standards, and more importantly, in relation to the interest of the public. It's normally an audit that should be done at more of a transversal level, because it's now looking at issues at a national level, at a more transversal level, government-wide. And it's ideally a situation where one should be looking at all three spheres of government in order to make a real meaningful conclusion and reporting on personal policy. I'm just highlighting that because people may not be familiar with these terms, something that we necessarily do. But at the moment, some of the personal audits that we do are normally done at the request of the department, and they normally confine to just that department. I think ideally for it to be most effective, and hopefully that will be the base of the discussion here, it ought to be done government-wide, because then we'll be able to look at things at a much more coordination level, at a much more kind of a transversal level. Things that will have an impact on the citizens right across the board. Okay. I know this is the challenge we were placing for ourselves in terms of how we define the scoping of these audits, but this should be the manner in which the assessment audit is defined. And in terms of our forward looking and thinking, this is the way if we are to be effective in doing assessment audit, we should begin to be looking. The time as to when we do that, I guess, is a different story, and we'll welcome the input from this discussion in terms of that meeting. So, Taylor, that is the classic distinction between the two audits, and I do trust that this does give, from an audit perspective, what the two different audits are meant to be. Now, I think before I hand over to Kimmy, I just want to highlight one important observation that when we were in the summit of the Auditor General throughout the world last day November in Mexico, one of the themes and papers that was discussed there related to how do Auditor General or the Supreme Audit Institution get involved in the determination of national performance indicators in their country. Should they get involved at all, or should they not get involved? And I must highlight that this discussion brought to light the position that the Auditor General throughout the world have adopted, that definitely the Auditor General should not get involved in defining and designing national indicators, should not get involved in determining the strategic objectives for government. That's the duty of the executive, that's the duty of the legislature. However, Auditor General ought to get involved if nothing is happening in influencing the direction towards the situation where national indicators are defined. And I think this meeting, amongst others, and other initiatives that have taken place in the past are a testimony to that role that is an office of leadership. So when we identified 5 years ago the need for the auditing of personal information and defined for ourselves what is it that we need to do to audit this information, we realized that we had a stumbling block. There are no norms that were developed in the country for government to begin to present information. Hence our early discussions with National Treasury way back then. And this is culminated into what National Treasury has produced as a wonderful document that clearly defines how that information ought to be presented. And we do realize that there's still some way to go in terms of defining more specific and guiding departments so that information is already published, but the base information is there. The same should apply also in terms of defining some of the broader national norms, broader national indicators. Mm-hmm. And this is where, when it comes to the issues of when the budget is allocated in Parliament, what should be the conditions that are attached to that budget to clearly define what will indicate effective use of that budget? And I think all those things are important for us in order for the audit goals and the audit priorities to be at least clearly defined. Because without that happening first, it's going to be difficult for the auditors, without being accused of interfering in policy, without being accused of meddling in issues of government management, to escape that responsibility. So what I want to highlight, Chair, is that that's a position that was taken and resolved in Mexico, that we should not the auditors be involved in that area. However, there will be a document that will be delivered in 2010 when the next summit of the Auditor General happens in South Africa that will have a standard of when this information is available, how should the auditors begin to audit it. Internationally, that standard is not there. It's still being worked upon at the moment, and we are participating in the working groups that are building that document. So I thought I should just make that introduction before Kimi comes in and look at the various role players and what they should do. That there are terrains that we can be involved in, and terrains that we ought not to be involved in. So, Chair, I think that's by way of the broad background and the introduction.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Chair. To step into the area of defining and clarifying the different roles and responsibilities, and I think also taking the background that the AG has painted with respect to the conceptual differences between the work that we do on audit of performance information and performance policy. Basically, Chair, on the presentation, one of our goals is to identify and articulate here the different roles each of the groupings within government has been playing in building up and contributing to the work that we do in terms of audit of performance information as well as in the area of performance audit. Right at the top on our slide, we're talking about specialist units within government. They range from national treasury to member states, who are the key players in government system, who provide some of the benchmarks as well as the national indicators against which performance in government is to be measured and assessed. And it is also within those institutions in government where the reporting framework against which all departments and entities are guided in terms of providing reports on the work that they do. So that's really the work that they do, and we really place a lot of reliance on on that work, because it gives us a sense in terms of what it is that we are going to be doing as what is happening. That can essentially get to the area of information and performance. AG has mentioned that there's a framework amongst others that has been developed as an example, driven by the National Treasury, to look at how does performance information that we audit get built up in various state entities. And that's one of the examples in terms of the reporting framework that we do our audit. And then on the next point, in terms of the, again, in cabinet as well as within legislature, the bulk of policy as well as planning for the activities of government, whether it's to do with infrastructure planning, whether it's to do with planning of various parts of government. clearly there's no role that we play the energy communicator in terms of the guidance that has been articulated from the Auditor General summit that happened last year. Certainly, I'm not playing as any specific role in relation to that, but I think the role that is the role of the And then on the next point, in terms of the executive authority role, that really where the real implementation of government policy happens. And clearly, in those areas where executive authority has a capability for implementation and monitoring, that's our best level of interaction normally happens. And that takes both the area of audit of performance information as well as performance audit. Clearly, I think if you look at the red line, it really demonstrates that we want to maintain the sense of independence in order to ensure that there is no confusion that is created in terms of place which holds. And certainly, ours will come in when, when we start looking at auditing performance information. I just want to highlight again, as the issue here, that we're really focusing on the assertions that are accompanied by the information that is being reported on in the annual report as well as the financial statement. So that's why we talk about our involvement based on all the planning that has happened within the state, as well as the guidance that has been given by specialists within the state. We then start getting involved in testing the accuracy, the validity, and the completeness of that information so that whenever it is being used in public, there can be a level of assurance that, you know, that the information has been tested to the extent of assessing the disparity and completeness. And without repeating again the importance of the distinction between performance audit and the OPI, which is the audit of performance information, there's a real focus in terms of where we get involved, and I think in order to ensure that we remain independent and as objective as possible in assessing the information, the key focus is around the evaluation of the three E's, which is the economy of expenditure, the effectiveness of that expenditure, as well as efficiency in terms of achieving the intended outcome that has been set out at policy level, as well as what has been implemented within Chair, I think for me, in terms of just making sure that we conclude the picture, it's important to clearly draw our attention to key distinct roles that are played by the different levels of public sector management, as well as to highlight the role that we also are playing. The rest of what I have on the slide, Chair, is really an articulation and the further elaboration on what I consider to be one of the key slides that I think we wanted to put to the attention of the committee and the different roles.
I think it's important also just to build on what DG has highlighted, that the skill set is another distinctive matter that needs to be noted here between the two audits. When it comes to the audit of personal information, we talk about a simple skill of checking presentation against evidence, and that's what the regularity auditor is able to do. Whether or not you are an expert in health, whether or not you're an expert in education, that skill is a specific skill that all accountants and auditors are trained to do. Now, when it comes to performance auditing, you can't evaluate economy and efficiency unless you are an expert in that discipline. And therefore, what it will require of us going into the future is to first evaluate and examine the skill set that we have within the office. At the moment, we only employ accountants and auditors. For us to do effective personnel auditing, if we are to audit the efficient and effective use of money in the health sector, there's no way we can do that effectively ourselves without getting practitioners and experts in that sector to help us to evaluate that. And what other auditors generally do that have gone down the line quite extensively in this area is to outsource or contract in skills in the specific discipline. And all they focus on doing is to coordinate the management and the collation of information so that the audit results are still meeting the requirements of the auditing standard for evidence. But the ability to do the work will require the exercise, say, in this slide, expert analysis of qualitative aspects of the subject matter. So that is another issue. Yes, we can look at things somewhat superficially as we currently do when it comes to the existence of policies and practices and standards and all those things. But when it comes to delving deeper now into the issue of efficiency and economy, it's going to be difficult to do that without people that are experts in the respective fields. I mean, if you look at a public work construction program, whatever it is, we cannot make a clear assessment of the efficient use of money for building programs, or construction programs, or infrastructure programs without getting technical aspects in those fields, whether it's quality surveyors, engineers, and so on and so forth. Statisticians, economists, or whatever. So, and I think it's pleasing that in some of the countries in the region are beginning to move in that direction. I mean, we're in Botswana last year meeting with the AGs of the English speaking group of AGs. It's amazing the extent to which a country like Ghana, for instance, has now progressed in beginning to infuse into their environment people with those specialists, the engineers, statisticians, economists, to begin to address issues of this challenge. And that's the direction we're also looking at considering. The timing for that, I guess, is what we need to talk about. But clearly, that's the way we should go. I think, by and large, it does conclude at a conceptual level, Chair, the kind of distinction you needed to make. Perhaps we can, I don't know how the program is meant to proceed, entertain any questions of clarity, or if I don't just at this phase of the action.
Yes, I think this is an appropriate place to pause and coming and
Yes, Chair, I would like to thank Dennis and for the presentation. I just have a few issues that I'd like to note for their comments. And I begin by just saying that if one looks at the annual reports of the departments and entities of the current last year, in very few of them can you actually find information or objectives set out that are actually measurable. And obviously that's problematic for the audit. So if it's not measurable, how do you actually, well then it's not credible. And maybe this is really more question for Tracy, because I know they have put out a very comprehensive document and we asked the departments if they know about it, and they also know about it. They don't seem to pay attention to it, so maybe that's the one issue. The second one is how long is it going to take us to get there? Is it possible to do a performance audit? I'm not talking about the information when a the Portland regularity audit is still that's chaotic, but simply not then. Is that possible? Yeah, the regularity audit. That's not in order. Or at a fairly high level of development, like this, let's say, what's the stage 3, level 3, can you then begin to do, and I'm not talking about auditing of information, I'm talking about the actual performance audit. That's the second part. And then, finally, just to introduce, in the interim, could we not be concentrating on special audit reports which the Auditor General is already beginning to bring out? And there are a number of them being done on Justice Department, there's one being done on Housing Department, on Capital Subsidy. Just specialized audits which bring out problems of delivery and then how to actually correct those problems. Would that not be an area which we should be perhaps moving ahead at a greater pace in the interim? I think for business that's fine.
Thank you. I think the information is good, right? But if the general could explain one other thing that was crucial in my mind. If I didn't change, the office will be doing performance audits. When departments are facing serious problems to provide simple information at the end of the financial year, how will they be provided? And I'm saying this with the full understanding that it's also a problem to access the entire community, that the departments are not getting the necessary skills to help them to can provide the necessary information at the end of the financial year. But also that even with besides employing people with the relevant skills, but also generating those skills, taking a serious, conscious effort at tertiary institutions to start recruiting and training those people, offering those learning so that at the end of that training they can come in at least department. How are we going to move to that level? And the other thing that I was also worried about is the fact that performance audit, you need specialized skills like the example that you have given. I mean, if you go to an audit education department, you might have somebody who is an auditor who understands the choice, what policies, how should they be implemented in education for you to come up with a clear, credible report. But how, from the auditor general's office, how have they seen forward-looking, in the sense of forward-looking, how they will get these skills? Because skills are shortage, although sometimes I don't believe it's skills shortage, to a certain extent it is. But with the kind of resources that we have, sometimes it's not an issue of skills shortage. It's a question of not taking the necessary, the skills that are in the market, because of the skills and get people who can get you to the kind of rate that you want. But I just want to know from the outside side of the office how they work and how they instinct actually get them to things.
Let me respond to the second question, please. The issue of the impact on personal auditing is the department is still battling with the basic priority. Maybe this is also inherent to the measurability of the objectives of the department, and I think that ought to start I think it's been mentioned at the level of when you allocate the budget in Parliament, what conditions are attached to those budgets in terms of identifying what objectives departments are going to attain and deliver on before the budgets are actually allocated. Now, whether that discipline is there or not in the budget allocation process, in portfolio committee level, I don't know, but it's something that ought to be done. Because then it helps the auditors that they go and audit, to audit something that is clearly defined. I think to come to the trend point, to have meaningful comments in the annual report. And it's one of those critical points that was discussed in Mexico as well by the community of auditors general, the importance of having very clearly defined objectives, and it should start with the allocation of the budget. If what it stands to say in the most critical basic shortcoming in departments is the issue of skills, to what extent does that become a measurable priority for the department? Because what is clearly apparent is that there's no problem, obviously, in government to allocate funds, because funds are available. But the ability for those funds to be utilized and managed properly and towards service delivery, I guess that's where the problem is. Coming back to the president, business unusual concept, and the need for the government to focus on that. But I don't think it ought to start with the executive. It ought to start at the parliamentary level as well, and setting those conditions. But I think it's far too late for that to be left to put it to the executive to do. It ought to be done there. But I mean, that's the submission that. We're making one of the slides where we're combining the executive cabinet legislature as a body that defines the strategic plus priorities and budgeting for government. And one of the issues typically, and I know it may not be relevant for this session, the basic skills, for instance, of qualified reports in government, local government in particular. To what extent do we have one of the priorities and objectives and budget allocation being given to areas that will eliminate qualified support in departments? You hardly see such an objective. And in going around and talking to the mayor, one of the reasons I'm delayed today was talking to the MEC of local government in the Western Cape. These are the issues beginning to unearth. How do you simplify the identification of priorities for government so that we begin to focus on things that will make a meaningful change without putting an enormous effort? So I do agree that I do contend that in the budgeting process should be given that level of intensity at the legislature. In cooperation with the community. Now, coming to ask the auditors in terms of our future thinking, in terms of where we're going to get skills, I do not think there is a huge scarcity of specialized skills in South Africa that can help us to do this information, because there are people that are practitioners in various disciplines. And what other auditors generally do in the world is not to employ those people, because to employ them full time may be a wrong approach, because they're not going to utilize them ongoingly, but rather contract them in as and when we need them. And for us, it is a question of beginning those networks to identify who will be the most critical skills we may need to employ full time to facilitate the coordination, but which skills can we be able to find on an ad hoc part-time basis to be able to help us with the objective we want to achieve? If we plan our personal audit in high school, for instance, it will give us sufficient time to say in a period of 3 years we'll be approaching a personal audit of, let's say, the education sector. It gives us sufficient time to then look at where we can get those skills that will help us to do a most effective and meaningful audit on that. So it's about 4 months. And I don't think there's a shortage of those skills. I mean, if they're not available in South Africa, they are available in other auditors general's office. They are available in other countries. And if they are sought on an ad hoc basis to give maximum value to the audit process, it's what we'll be beginning to present in our strategic plan. And I know we're not that specific at the moment in our strategic planning document, but that's the direction we'll be moving towards. And the clarity of this document is going to help us to begin to plan those topics we begin to take our timing and specialize in very much here.
That's also to add around the issue of the skill challenge, besides the other question. I think this is a very hard one after that, which is a wake up call for us as well. Maybe this is the time for us, once we hear ourselves for the point, this is the time for us to begin to identify what are the key focus areas that we want to be focusing on in terms of the point in the future. Because that will give us an indication as to where we want to focus our minds with respect to the type of skills that we need once we know which areas we want to focus on. And definitely this will help in a way, probably a blessing in disguise that we have this challenge around skills, because it then gives us the opportunity to think properly so that we don't have to trip over the need to identify engineers in 2 years when we could have done it. The challenge that we need to take on board as the AG is obvious to say that there needs to be some critical thinking around what we want to do best and why. And I think the engagement with the community will assist us in moving in that direction. On the issue of special audit and focusing on the delivery challenges of an income measure, I think I agree with the trend in the sense that we cannot wait to have full capacity and to have fully fleshed out the methodology and develop the standards for performance quality. We cannot wait to get there. I think there is scope for us to do special audits, especially where there's been a clearly defined arrangement as to one of the focus areas. For example, on the area of housing, we have been involved in some of those special audits where we did quite an extensive, we've covered an extensive area where there was a special need have identified. I think on the other question which was about picked up was the one on measurable objectives which are not there in the annual report that I know. National Treasury to add something to that so that we can get a picture from the side of our special report.
Let me start by saying that this is an issue that has been concerning the Treasury for quite some time.
Mm-hmm.
It's an issue that the Treasury has made statements, I think, in appearing in various oversight structures on, in terms of the relevance. And the Minister has on various occasions, also spoken to this issue. What we've done recently is to review the yearly document and emphasize the link that needs to be made between the various documents that are prepared in the process, the strategy and the ENE and so on, and the reporting thereof. And to the extent that we picked up this problem in the past, you will, if you look at how the fund allocation has been done, you will pick up that there are areas where something was sitting as a normal appropriation that got taken out of normal appropriation and made a conditional cut. And part of the reason of doing these things was because we were becoming wary of some of the objectives that get set by various departments. Now, that is the role that the department must set. That is the role that forms part of the strategy document that gets tabled in Parliament. And I think a process of interrogating these against the priorities that have been set by government, whether they are relevant and so on, by an appropriate structure in Parliament is also a necessary action that ought to be taken. There's only so much that one oversight structure, because in a way, Treasury does play some oversight role in some of these things, but there's only so much Treasury can do. We need to ensure that all the oversight structures operate effectively so that when there are these gaps that get identified, people can be held accountable, and then there can be a change. And we've been hammering this message over a period of time. And unfortunately, the more you repeat it, it appears as if you're trying to provide excuses. But I think it's important that all the other structures operate effectively so that we can then button down some of those challenges.
I would like us to get into some form of discussion as well, not just a question of answer session. But let's just take questions now, and then just go into more discussion. Mr. Stevens?
Thank you, Chair. I know that, this has been discussed by a lot of people, so I'll put it as a question, not as a concern, because I'm sure there are already lots and lots of thought to be going on to this issue, but my problem in understanding the question of performance audit is how do you reach objective evaluation benchmarks, because evaluation is in its very nature has a subjective element. And the problem is that it might become too subjective, which means that very little reliance can be placed on the audit dependent on the evaluation. And I understand that you will evaluate against given objectives. You're not evaluating the objective. There's a clearly defined objective, and you evaluate performance given the objective, but you don't evaluate the objective itself. So, yes, I understand that. But even so, let's say, for example, I'm a department that is supposed to have certain measurable deliverables, and I do 70% this year using all my resources. So because I'm a good DG, I go for 90% next year. But in doing 90% simply because of the law of diminishing return, I am not being as economical as I was when I did 70%. So on the one hand, I get a better score because I've achieved 90% of dark, but I've been less economic, and I've been how do you evaluate? Did I do better or worse? Could I have done better or worse? I don't know. And this to me is the sort of problem. It's when I give a student a piece of work to do, and I come and I evaluate it, and I give him an A+. There is a measurable objective, but Madam Chair here is a much thicker teacher than I, and gives him a B for the same piece of work. How can we be sure that our evaluation at the end of the day is on some sort of a benchmark that people can say, yes, if it's been done like that, then it doesn't matter who did it, you would have gotten approximately the same result. Please give me some idea of that. Thank you.
I think that question is whether being responded to straight away. And I think it brings to the head the importance of who does what in this process. And the involvement of the right aspect is doing first and foremost that identification of the benchmark and objective. And that is why in the slide that Stephen spoke about, he spoke about the action right at the top. If you want to determine national norms, national indicators, good objectives and all those things, you need to get the access to do that. I mean, that list may not have been completed by highlighting the treasury instead as a, it can go right across the board when it comes to the employment of the sector. But I think those that will just be the coordinating department. And I would imagine this is where, if we do this thing properly, we ought to make sure that from a parliamentary perspective, that step is done effectively, first and foremost. Because if we miss it at that level, we're going to have exactly the same problem that you're highlighting, that we're now going to start setting policies and goals against the wrong norm, monitoring implementation and all those things against the wrong norm. We could be sitting with a situation right now, and I've got no doubt that is the case, where norms are not clearly defined. They are there because some DG, some minister, someone has determined them. But who says those are the right norms? And that's why we say that should be the first step to be done. And if there's going to be intervention coming from this forum that we're having today, it's got to be done there. And that's why we're highlighting it right at the beginning. I think it's at the heart of the point you are making. What could happen as part of the personal audit, for instance, when you do it, when you engage the experts at the time when you do that, one of the findings could be a clear indication that the norms against which we are evaluating our effectiveness are not necessarily the correct norms. And I appreciate the point that as auditors, we shouldn't be commenting about whether the norms are right or wrong. But the audit could eventually arrive at that conclusion without necessarily prescribing what the norms are. But the process by which you actually went about doing that could be a flawed process. So even though we haven't as yet, I mean, engaged on that, but it's something that is flagging in this forum is saying, let's have. And I don't know if you meant to what extent SSA and other implementation are beginning to look into that reality. That as we put objectives there in our annual report, the objectives that are linked to what is credible by way of knowledge. Now, the role, therefore, of us in this forum, I would like to highlight it, because I think, as you said in the beginning, we need to come up with some form of a way forward in terms of who is going to play. You suppose ideally to play what role in order to take personal auditing and even the audit of personal information into a much more meaningful level within South Africa. I do think it's a challenge that we need to deal with. Chair, if I can just add one thing. Freeman, I think if I'm not mistaken, one of the conditions for setting, for instance, the objectives in the annual report should be based on the principles of economy, efficiency, and effectiveness. Now, that implies on its own that even at the departmental level, there ought to be a cognizance given to the accurate and adequate setting of those objectives. Now, if that is not done, who should be blowing the whistle? Should it be the auditors? Should it be treasury? But you're raising a very valid point.
Maybe that's all you can say. But Madam Chair, first, generally, for newer programs, it gets to be easier to do. For old programs, it gets to be difficult to change the existing behavior.
But a short statement that I would make, and it's not a political statement, you might have noticed press releases that the treasurer refuses with the money. And I think I would just leave it at that, that there are times when we feel very, very strongly during the allocation process that the objective set, the business case, doesn't make sense. And then we say there's no point in allocating the money in this particular instance. And of course, we end up not allocating the money. And I must also add the dynamic here that for existing programs, let's just take as an example, the rolling out of the ARPs, and you find that the business case doesn't make sense. But the need to ensure that the resources allocated for that particular activity is there and is overwhelming. And that's where it gets a bit more complex, because you're not going to allocate the resources because the business case doesn't make sense. Then you put conditions and say, at least these conditions must be in place in order for this money to roll out. But even when you've done that, that doesn't guarantee that the execution that takes place follows all the rules that have to be followed. Hence, in the process, we always cry out for all the oversight structures playing a role. Because sometimes you get to a point where it's really, really difficult not to go ahead. And then you go ahead, put conditions, and then you expect that all the role players can play the role in ensuring that that is happening.
Can I understand your comment just on the question of performance auditing and how do you ensure that an objective is made? I'm not, and the trend of the discussion at the moment is referring to a set of norms that need to be established. The part of the to investigate the environment in which they're operating, and when they're dropped in that terms, they're working with the effect of norms, and somehow, even if they're not explicitly stated, can be extricated from it. That's my understanding. And that norm is not an auditing standard, but it's the norm on which the auditor general's office will depend for some form of evaluation and accuracy. Now, that sounds very nice when you're talking about technical work like engineering, structural procedures. It's far more complex when you get into the policy domain or things like health, welfare, all of those kinds of issues, even after the healthcare, you need to do sort of anything. And the other thing that I would like to bring to the debate is the question of ideology. Because norms aren't fixed. You know, there's not a thing that there's a basic norm that's out there. It depends on the ideological perspective that you're looking at. If you're looking at the debate in South African society around all sorts of things, you have a number of commentators from universities, CDE, race relations, data. You've got all kinds of experts operating in the field, but depending on the ideological orientation and the way that they perceive effectiveness in a particular area, and what they see as the critical delivery factors, the significant delivery factors, you have very, very different evaluations of systems. And that's where it places the Auditor General's office in the midst of a potential political storm. Because you can say that you want to employ the experts. The experts are there, but experts do not come in a wonderful objective mode. Experts come from a particular perception of what is right to achieve certain things, and it comes with a particular theoretical domain of all kinds of conceptual issues being thought out, and this is the way to go, this is the way to go, and whatever. Thank you. In the humanities, yeah. So, I mean, I see, and that is why I think it would be very useful for us to have an intensive session around performance auditing per se. I think the audit of performance information is a little bit clearer in my mind, but performance auditing, I think, comes with a whole complex company. And it's related to the basic thing of what auditors do. The auditors actually verify the information against standards that exist, commonly accepted standards. We're working in a domain where there aren't existing commonly accepted standards. Even though what is normative to be delivered, if you're saying the application of an ARV regime should, under normal circumstances, yield this kind of result. I don't think you're ever going to get that because it's so dearly dependent on countries and situations in which you operate. So what I'm saying in a nutshell is that this is the one area where the Auditor General's office goes up, enters into a domain in which the standards which the auditor serves generally relies upon during the evaluation are not fixed across the terms. And I mean the question then comes is do we require the party to set up front exactly what they are expecting to achieve. So that you are not talking about best practice or an expert opinion on what they should be achieving. But you're asking the department to set their own standards, their own norms of standards, and then you're working from that standard. Yeah, I think Timothy might be saying that then that standard might not be a big practice model and anything else. So, sorry, I'm just rambling on, but can we just address this question of being almost in a shifting sense?
I think if before this debate ran away with us, because the point you're raising is very relevant, and I think it's emphasizing the point of who should do what. Maybe I should put up a slide. So this is the crux of the approach, you know, coaching. Within government, there are people who are employed to define, you know, whose job and duties and expertise. To come up with these credible norms. We would call to step SA there for lack of another unit, because any information that is coming from step SA when it comes to statistical analysis or let's say whatever norm is normally accepted. Any information that comes from the central bank in terms of whatever decision is credible. And these are the expertise we need to specialize to identify within government to say who is best placed to cut across all the ideological thinking that may be there, but come up with something that is close to the objective that would see wider acceptance. That is the first point. Because unless we get to that point, we're going to, as you say, have a problem of dealing with shifting sand. We need to anchor it at that level. If you go to National Treasury, they're experts on certain matters which, if you know, if they promulgate a particular position, it's likely to be widely accepted. And our trick is to identify that. Because if you don't do that, this discussion with your right share is just going to run away and people.
I actually agree totally with what Terence has said and your context. See, I think that we are so far away from actual performance auditing of entities and departments that we should really just put that a long way in the future. And I'll tell you why, Barbara, because No, no, but I want to come back to who speaks as to what is it that we're trying to achieve. And I just want to use an example of where there can be a contradiction. The Department of Trade and Industry says we want to create more SMEs. That's an objective. The Housing Department says we want to build good objectives. Brilliant. Housing Department says we want to build 1 million houses at the most cost-effective price. There's a contradiction here. Because probably, to build those houses at a cost-effective price, and quickly, you would give it to a huge construction company and say, go get on with the job and build the houses. And that would be economics. That would make good economic sense. But in the process, they're not actually encouraging small businesses. They're creating jobs, but not encouraging small businesses. So now, when you come to that, it becomes, and that, I think that is where the grey area, by the way, I think it's seriously about, who is succeeding? You know, and I think, you know, that's what bothered me. So what I think we need to do is, and we need to talk about where the way forward, but perhaps not now, because, you know, I do have some views on that, and perhaps I should leave that later. But that's what bothers me. And can I just conclude? Having come from a province which is poor and under-resourced in terms of skills, and now I'm talking about right up front what the original saying, the specialist national treasury is there, indicate, unless you have a properly costed and credible budget in the first place, how do you actually audit the performance? And I know in my province, they just suck figures out of their thumbs. We're going to spend X million rand on this program. Nobody has even bothered to cost it out, whether it's too much or too little. Now, unfortunately, that sort of skills are just not available. I wonder how many cost accountants there are in the budget department of the various government departments. These people are not available. So now, on the one hand, the Auditor General is going to employ experts to audit what they're doing, but the experts are there right at the beginning telling them how to do this thing properly. And I think that is a huge challenge that the Treasury has. It's something that I've thought about for 10 years in Vishu, and you know, but they just said, what do we do? We don't have the people. And to me, that impact on the way we spend our money and how effectively and efficiently we do things. And I think you can see it in the results where that forever supply environment, they underspend here, they underspend here, they underspend, you know, they just don't get it right. I'm not blaming anybody, I'm just saying, I think it's a huge challenge that we've got, and it's at the absolute foundation of the whole system, in my view.
And then we'll go to
Dr. An interesting observation in what the Honourable Trent is saying is that some of the skills required to do those things, budgeting and so on, are chartered accountants or people who are accountants. That province, in as far as African chartered accountants are concerned, is the one that produces the most, and two of them are sitting in this room. And they are not in that province. So and this is a discussion I had with the province about 3-4 months ago, that we keep saying in the province we don't have the skills. But let's just take a look honestly. That is the province that has produced the most chartered accountants in this country. The best chartered accountants in this country came from that province. And it still produces more. Now, what do we do to keep those skills in the province? What do we do to develop those skills within the province even further? But I don't think that is the subject for now.
Dr. Woods, thank you for the interpretation. Yeah, I don't know if I can call it together any interventions or questions. That's fine, that's fine. But I want to bring it back to Scott's that we oversee what the general as a matter of speaking and the quality of the and we have this development where a serious development which has been discussed over a lot where if you have a proper performance system in place that's going to work and you're going to get assurance on emphasis shifts from compliance to performance, so this is an important element, and we have a flavor of the feeling of here.
My intervention is more about auditing of the performance information and the performance auditing. Theory two, if we have a proper performance system in place, based on performance budget, compelled every department to adhere to, then there's less and less reason to have these ad hoc performance auditing exercises. Because every department is performing to a system that is trying to test it. What are you wanting from an auditor general? Is assurance. You need to give us some other time. We want assurance. We want assurance. Two parts of the system. And you can give the estimate from the Baker Range of the office. We want assurance that the performance that the department that comes out of the E&E actually does represent good performance. And then the other side, we want to see the performance that supports the office. Reports. If that has an accurate report of the actual performance, that will make the comparison. If we get that assurance from you, that's all we have to have. In Parliament, maybe people know that the performance government promised to give them for their taxpayers' money is acceptable, and it's good value for money, and at the end, that's what they got. And then we used to your central issue with the general and the central issue that you tested on is that which in your case is the idea about skill. And describing your skill to go into policy domains and I think it's totally unnecessary at this point. I think with the basic system, with the basics in place, we can't find some of these complex and these answers. And the basics that I guess that you said are really that you're provided with the information, the first assurance stage, that enable you to say, hey, if the system is in place, and how we're essentially talking about a constant. If you know the system has been properly in place, you're halfway there. You can go a further stage by looking at the mechanics of the constant. Costing like ABC where you know there's accommodation over here. You go further steps. The only stage you don't go to is where you need a quantity to go that the bridge to be done and so on that way. But we can get to that. At least you're going to be providing assurance and you have the skills to do that, costing is not the rocket science. But of course this all depends, and as some other candidates have been doing this morning. You're getting the necessary information in the EME and it isn't that point. I think that's the National Treasury has got us down very badly at the wrong time. We look at these objectives, and my students, I text them all the time, they come from different levels of government and provinces. It's a 7-block day. And the budget guidance document that this is going to be that is the level of what you will know is represents good performance intentions. What is the general government to say? Can we give you assurance that this is reliable? Can you back that one? Your oversight works for the public to know that we're being prepared.
You are not coming back. Do you want to, or shall we leave back here?
Let me give it a try. Maybe I can go back to the previous slide. I know I didn't touch on that slide. You know, in doing all this audit, whether it's just audit of personal information or personal audit, our primary role as auditors was to pick up the issue, is to delve into what are the underlying causes. And the slide is highlighting that. And I think our ability to do that, whether we do it at an elementary level of personal auditing, the trend which we have highlighted, or whether we're doing it at an advanced level of personal audit as we have indicated here, or whether we're doing it at a basic level of doing a simple assurance on the credit of information, you can find that in most instances the underlying causes could converge under one umbrella. If the
there are basics that are lacking at the level of the top part. We always come up with problems when it comes to the audit. One of the arguments that we've always been advancing as to why we need to be patient about doing a proper regulatory audit has been, for instance, the fact that the basic skills in leadership monitoring and you name it in producing the right confidence when it comes to financial information are going to be likely the same reasons and same causes that are going to pick up when you do the other audit. And therefore, if you do the first thing first, chances are that when you go to other more complicated forms of evaluation, things will begin to put themselves out. And that is why we're putting the, as auditors, we need to provide the insight based on evidence, which insight will then give rise to some form of foresight for those that are support that can then deal with the issue at a much more proactive level. So there's a link between the two, depending where our setting point should be. And I guess it's a long way to say the observation that Dr. Wood is making are not far off the mark. And that's why in identifying these various steps and scopes and coverage, we need to make them in such a way that we are able to identify those root causes there. Now, the phase of starting, for instance, with the audit assessment information gives us a very good platform to say at this elementary entity level of managing performance, to what extent are we picking up common trends that could undermine the ability of the proper effect when it comes to service delivery. That could well be what could come out when you do analyze the report. And that's what we're moving towards and we're starting doing that in our general report on something as simple as financial auditing. And we'll be doing that when it comes to a much more extensive evaluation of the personal information as well. And gradually we'll begin to move towards that. But it doesn't stop us from making sure that we start now to get those that should be doing the right work at an executive and legislative level to begin that work now so that when these audits begin to move in that direction, the government is ready for those audits. Otherwise, we'll be rehashing the same root causes that are basic, leadership basic, whatever, time and time again. And I think this slide and the next slide is important as a framework to say who should be starting doing what, when. If you go to the next slide, then that's the one I think we like the best. And I think the foresight that we need to be bringing to this as part of this forum is say, has the work started at that top level? Yes, we know on the left-hand side, the reporting framework on the government indicators, that has started. There is a tangible document that Treasury has produced, and that should be commended. But now the rollout of that, who is responsible for that? And when we start looking at those, even at the line, at above that red dotted line, because if nothing is happening there, you can almost predict that the audit is going to have an adverse and a negative outcome. And that's why we're emphasizing this thing. Without necessarily being seen to be passing the buck to anyone, but that's the reality of audit independence.
Sorry?
Yes.
Committee, or Parliament, I mean, legislative committee, either as a position or as a position, should help
when if portfolio committees do not have the necessary support, how will they be able to engage the department for that? And that's why I say I think it's way the crux of the matter. And I know it's a political discussion, but I just wanted to do a short comment. The role of the legacy is at the center of the point. Ensuring the form, the executive, to the auditor general, the information that goes in, the credible information that will ask the auditor general to can give his information, whatever the questions are, and to test the standards that exist for themselves, but also that can lead us quicker towards the government policy. But that's what I know they can't, both of them can't say what is a finger at us, but also others relate to it. It's not a matter of, pointing out what they need to do their best, but that fortunately, the kind of support that we need, and the developing the support, focusing on more oversight, that's going to be a challenge.
Would agree. I think the challenge on the education is huge. And can I just and I'll tell you now, Dr. Woods in the plan in considering what you were saying. I think you made a useful comment that you want to the public out there wants to know that money has been used for but in that money used well, there's the issue of the consequences, the economic reasons. That's not just a character that you can look at, and I think that's probably where the Auditor General's office is going to take us now, when we're doing cost effectiveness. But we're not just talking consequences, we're talking about impact. We're talking about outputs having outcomes. And, if you look at the standard Australian New Zealand kind of body, where you have a policy, and in order to implement a policy, you work on a certain strategy to develop certain outputs. And it is anticipated that those outcomes will then have the outcome which will then achieve that overall goal. So in other words, as instance, one out of you, you want to reduce illiterate penetration. You work on a strategy and say we will send out 7,000 out of school. Your output is 7,000 out of school and the number of graduates. Is equivalent about what your career outputs. Your outcome is how far that grant can significantly impact on the illiteracy rate. And that is almost like what Statistics South Africa deals with, is your outcome, the level of literacy in the future. And that is where the Auditor General's office finds itself. When you're talking about impact, the Auditor General's office, and I've seen it here with the Treasury. Treasury spelled out a very clear relationship between output and outcome. That the whole, if you look at the triangle that Treasury puts out for us in the document on page 3, it's input activities, output, outcomes, and the finance, the impact. And that is what I'm talking about, great area, because we can, and I mean, are we saying that it's the job of the Auditor General's office merely to look at cost efficiency, economical use of resources, confirm the information around performance that departments provide in annual reports. That is the domain of an auditor. When we start looking at impact, when we start taking it on to another level of analysis, that is when you start getting yourself especially, is this policy actually delivering what it intended to do? Are these outputs or these outcomes, you want to make together. And I think that's where you start living in a gray area of ideological disputes, such as you say, you lose these outcomes, you might have to lose outcomes now, and then what happens to the model thing, the model presupposes that you have to lose outcomes in the first 2 years, and then in 3 years, you have to increase outcomes, you know, that kind of thing. And that's where I'm worried. If you want to respond, that's it.
Yeah, I feel it's dangerous territory to ask that word to be able to transport it to outcome. We have to make assumptions at some point that there are policy objectives, that the matter is the public burden for that government, so those are their policy objectives. Which is the thing that can recognize their outcomes to come. Time to stop at the programs we develop to achieve the outcome. Those programs are really mostly outcome-based. I'm saying that we could just get our fix on that and get the system going and ask all the general to help us to ensure on that level. And if the outcomes don't ever come from, we're just going to make a decision this number.
That I think is bringing up an interesting issue for all of us then, because you argue we need to limit ourselves to up to the point of outcome. If you look under mandate of the government, under performance audits. Audits evaluate the utilization of resources and the impact of what was done over a period of time compared to the mandate strategy of the entity involved. Then they have an example underneath. The mandate strategy is to provide housing for the community, create the best community in 5 years' time. Audit report confirmed that the housing was built. Is utilization of resources and that impact, the effectiveness is envisaged for the long-term strategy of the machine. Now, the impact was in creating a safe community. That was, it seems to me, clear. The mandate of strategy was to provide the housing in the community, creating safe community. So you're saying in order to create safe community, you've got to come to housing. The impact is really, and that's where I start worrying, equally with regard to this, whether we aren't entering into a domain that is going to turn the Auditor General's office into the center of politics. Is it not for the politicians to be arguing that this is what we achieve? But the outcome hasn't been spoken about, and the outcomes have not been achieved. I just want to say more than that. Do you want to comment?
Yes, thank you, Chair. Exactly the point that in fact I started to make in my first question before I asked about the and it seems to me, having listened to a lot of the inputs now, is that it's called a performance audit, but it might equally and possibly more appropriately be called performance evaluation. Because that is what it is, it's an evaluative qualitative analysis of what has happened. And in that case, my inclination would be to say it's not really the job of the community. Simply because, A, it's not really verification and validation, which is what it does. It's evaluation. And that puts you right in the middle of policy debate, as you've already indicated. And I was thinking to myself, let's say we have and this is nobody's policy problem, and let's say we have a government that's elected coming in on the basis that we need to nationalize all industry in South Africa. We set up a department to do that. Who in heaven's name, what expert are you going to get to evaluate that process and give it an A+? Because everybody out in the private sector is going to be mostly against that funding. So they would find all sorts of reasons to show that this is a hopeless ideology, it's useless, it's a waste of money, etc. But nevertheless, as Dr. Wood said, that's what the people voted for. So you're going to get lots of cross purposes. You've got to actually make sure that the expert that you get actually buys into the policy before he starts evaluating. And that takes away the objectivity of the whole thing. I think that performance auditing or performance evaluation is an excellent idea. It's not something that I would say should not be done. In fact, I think it's essential that it be done. The only thing is I'm suggesting at this stage it shouldn't be done by the Auditor General. We need another body or office or whatever to do that. Let's not get the Auditor General involved in something that is right in the middle of policy to make a political issue, and that sort of thing. Let's keep him away from that.
I just want to start. I totally agree with what Gavin and Martin said. You know, having served on public accounts for many years and users as well, the worst thing you can do in that oversight committee is to start looking at policy whether it's right or not. That's not the issue. Policy, as Martin says, is determined by the government of the day, and they will be judged by the people that make the choices at the end of the day. I mean, that's what it's about. But what I think we're talking about now is really the difference between the CSMA and the old Exchequer Act. This is, I mean, it's a wonderful piece of legislation because it talks about managing the finances, not like the old Exchequer Act, which had thousands of rules. It's so, you know, it's so regulated managers that they couldn't manage, and they have to follow all these procedures. And I think this is what we've got to concentrate on. The resources have been given, whatever they are supposed to achieve. You use the adult education, I use the housing one. We're going to build X number of houses. It doesn't matter whether, you can't measure whether doing that improves the community. You can only count the houses. That's all. You can't say, is this community better off or not? You can see it and say, no, they probably are. You can't measure that. So therefore, what we need to be doing in auditing is, A, we need, first of all, to be able to audit, you've got to have measurable, and I'm coming back to my thing, objectives that are measurable. You can't measure whether a community is more happy and peaceful. You can measure how many ABIT clinics you set up and whether they're operating properly, and you can also measure what it costs, as you said, but you can't ever measure what is the impact be. You say, yeah, we've got more literate people. What is that doing? So I believe that we must be just very basic about what we do. And I think that we must make sure that information that the Auditor General can be audited so we can give it to them. And now that we've come to the cost effective part of it, and I think, you know, I come back again to my costing of an operation. If you're in business and you're going to embark on a project, you can cost it in a number of ways. Yeah. You can cost it by doing it this way or doing it a different way, and at the end of the day, what are you going to do? You're going to say, I'm going to cost it to do it in the most economical way. That's your achievement. And I think really, you know, to me, it's as simple as that, and those are the sort of skills we need in government, in the management of our finances. You know, and without that, we're not going to achieve what we're setting out to do.
I mean, we're still at the start of this whole process.
But I think the debate is beginning to emphasize how important it is that the right players do the right thing. So that the auditors focus on auditing. And without getting into the details of how auditing of these things is done, because I mean the guidelines and guidelines that we need to pass of how to get out to assess an audit of effectiveness and efficiency in order to look at the issues of impact and all that stuff. And without getting embroiled into the policy decisions, but rather looking at things in such a way that you are able to evaluate, make an assessment of whether or not those that have done what they should have done it in terms of the norms that clearly defined norms that are meaningful and so forth. That's why any audit that judge on the premise that there must be something to audit against. If there's nothing to audit against, then that's not enough to audit. And we're emphasizing in the slide we presented that that top part has got to be cut and chosen very, very solid in order to avoid the kind of booby traps the auditor may find himself or himself in between. So I think that's a very fundamental principle. Otherwise, the audit could only be confined to an example. For instance, if let's say you want to audit whatever complicated geological issue there is to be audited, the first thing to determine is whether are there norms that have been determined. If there are no norms, there's no point in even starting the audit. The audit report is simply to say there are no norms, there's no one who's developing the norms, and therefore what you're promising to achieve cannot be subjected to any objective evaluation. That's the basis of the audit. And that's why that slide is very, very important, very, very important. So that when we're requested to do performance audits, we're not restricted to looking at things that are not showing the full picture of what it's supposed to be. If it's up to all service delivery, asking to all the service delivery against what? Is the service delivery against what is promised in the annual report, or service delivery against what is promised? Is a much more transversal mission, you know. And that's the main distinction between the two. The other one is looking at an entity level, the other one is looking at national, whatever, norms and transversal effects. So I think that distinction is important, and just to emphasize the importance of getting the top part to be done properly, first and foremost.
Picking up on one of the points the auditor generalized, that he needs something to audit against. I'd like to put the ball in the accounting general's court if we can have a petition. Yeah, so will we expect the auditor general to give us assurance on whether performance objectives are accepted on the represent good performance? And we're going to be looking at the E&E, which objectives, some which appear quantifiable and others not. And the words of the accounting general earlier that he agreed that departments and entities are instructed to do that on the basis of economies and efficiencies. And National Treasury puts out many good guideline documents, so can't say many good stuff. But have you put out any guidelines for any department to say what you mean by economy and efficiencies? Because you say words in a dictionary. The financial management definitions that mean something different. And that's what we're talking about, financial management. And as I explained for the dispensation, for example, that efficiency really means what your outputs are for your inputs. And there's only one way to find that out. You've got to go through certain mechanical exercises, and it's got to be done properly, and it's got to be done diligently. Otherwise, at the end of the day, your E&D it's a document that has limitations. And the basis for the auditor general to do the job we're talking to him about is limitations. So if you can give us some guidance on that.
If I may, just to say we don't have explicit guidelines on costing. It's not that we have not considered it within the Treasury. We have. But obviously the different costing methodologies, etc., their appropriateness needs to be judged against the nature of the particular program. So, you know, we kind of find it difficult perhaps to take a very standardized and generic approach towards exactly what the methodology needs to be, and it needs to be whatever is most appropriate for the nature of the program. So we do not want to put out a standardized approach framework per se, but we are obviously wanting to support departments in implementing the framework, And so to that extent, we are working closely with departments and also in terms of training them towards the implementation of this, which obviously includes the economy and efficiency indicators. We also have 5 pilot departments, which we're looking at, including service departments and PIC departments, which are different by their nature. So we also wanting to restore the lessons from that, and in going forward, then obviously update the framework in areas where necessary. But we're wanting to look at what works best in practice, given where institutions are in South Africa, as opposed to taking a textbook approach, which one could. And then just say we want unit costs here and we want whatever there.
The fact of the matter is, does the Auditor General's office focus on economy and efficiency? The effectiveness is a more problematic area.
Yeah,
that's your aspect, how effective it is. I hear 2 testing methods, it's 2 about to be delivered. I can see everyone is just dying to get the cream scones, which, by the way, are legendary. I hear scones still well known to the Okay, I think that's great at this point, and I was wondering if it wouldn't be useful Treasury. I've never known such a vigorous debate amongst officials as we see here between the Treasury officials. I was wondering if the Treasury just couldn't do a brief presentation of what they're doing, because I think that would situate us more in the different roles here and understand them, and then we can try and relate the Treasury to what the Auditor General is trying to achieve. And I noticed the Auditor General's office is looking a little bit more tense. All we're trying to do is reduce your work. Okay, can we adjourn? What's the time? 5. Yes. Yes, sir.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Maybe just 1 or 2 comments before I hand over to the presentation, is that I think the discussion around performance auditing is a discussion that perhaps needs to be engaged with a little longer. I think the concept needs to be properly crystallized. And to what extent do we go and what do we mean exactly in the context of South Africa is something that we must engage with a little bit more actively prior to the 2010 or even at the stage if by 2010 or not later. I think it's something that we may have to engage with properly before we actually do it physically. And I think that's one comment. The second comment is that I know that the Auditor General's presentation is based on international best practice, and I really would not want to question international best practice. But when we talk impact, and Kay Brand is going to talk to this, we would want to have more than just 3 E's, particularly within the South African context, because we are a country that has got a particular history. When we want to achieve certain policy objectives, we also want to transform our society. And in transforming society, we want to make sure that issues of equity are issues that are foremost in the programs and policies that are being developed and implementation thereof. And hence the document that we're going to be talking to also talks to the issues of equity when we talk impact. We don't just talk economy efficiency and effectiveness, but we also talk in terms of equity. It's absolutely critical for us to ensure that is emphasized, because it's critical for the objectives of this government. Kay Brown is going to talk to those issues. We're going to shy away from defining audit, performance of audit. We'll engage at the debate at a later stage, but we'll deal with the document, please, Kay.
On the one with the government-wide monitoring and evaluation.
can say that the government-wide monitoring and evaluation documents is basically a policy document. We form the backdrop to the work that we did within the framework. Essentially, it lays out the performance information landscape, and we have various different areas, programs, information, evaluations, and then also things you can survey information, which is the social demographic information, statistics, the framework obviously talks only to the programs for this information, but there will be frameworks for the other just in terms of, I think a really important thing which the framework does is to introduce standardized context, and just to put that up there, indicating exactly what we mean by the different words and things in our terminology, implicit and graciously referring to our raw materials and other inputs, activities, the process of putting those together, what we do with them, what we produce, obviously the output. Outcomes and technical results, specifically medium-term results, obviously for specific beneficiaries, what is the result that or the consequence for them, and then ultimately the high-level development result impact. Essentially, if we were to use an example, essentially reducing the illiteracy. Reducing the illiteracy rate or increasing the literacy rate, the high level impact might be economic growth, for example, to that. Essentially, in terms of the framework, what we're saying is that up front, when a program is designed in the strategic planning phase, the indicators at all of these levels should be explicit and predetermined at that point already. In terms of the framework, at the point of budgeting would be the point at which one would crystallize the targets related to that, obviously then given the level of funding. And then obviously in the implementation phase, then monitoring and evaluation, and obviously in the auditing phase, then the audit of the final report. Obviously I think goes without saying, the departments have completely in their control the first three levels, and as we've already said, the economy and efficiency indicators link to those three levels. Effectiveness and equity link to the higher two levels. The other standardized one of the other standardized things that the framework also introduces are specific criteria for good indicators, you know, that may be reliable, relevant, etc. Okay. What have we been doing thus far? The technical assistance unit, which is housed in the Treasury, has been training institutions. And also providing some sector support. I also mentioned earlier that we have five departments, and they're listed there, that we've been particularly focusing on. These departments have been chosen so that they include departments which differ in nature, so for example, which would have a service delivery orientation, or a policy delivery orientation, etc. And we've been focusing on them specifically in terms of determining indicators, and we're in a process now of actually working on the document which will indicate what the lessons learned are. That will obviously assist us in refining the guidelines going forward. Sandy is also busy developing training programs and curricula, and it's almost complete in that activity. Obviously, in terms of the budget submission guidelines and the training sessions around that, we had some new requirements.
and obviously the format change for that, as well as in the ENN, I'll talk about this in the next slide, where we also introduced some new requirements and the formats and the training required for those. We're also considering within the Treasury expenditure reviews, specific expenditure reviews. So we started just trying to apply our minds to that. And also within the PFMA amendments exercise that we've been concluding internally, we also have been mindful, obviously, of the requirements we would want in terms of the framework. Okay, progress to date in terms of specifically talking towards talking about making the objectives more measurable. We, per program, prominently then featured quite a few central objectives. The idea was that each objective should contain the strategic intent, the specific interventions, and a measurable or quantifiable indicator which could be used to assess this against. And then also to talk to those, a table with performance indicators, instead of having performance indicators per program, which are sometimes presented a problem because you have two programs which may have a similar objective. We just asked at a higher level to for us to have some indicators which were quantifiable and trendable, and also for this information to be for the full 7 years, the three past years, the current financial year, and the 3 years of the MTEF. And the idea was to try and get a tighter link between the objectives stated and these indicators, as opposed to having a few objectives or having objectives in front and then having a shopping list of possible indicators. So it was kind of to try and tighten a little bit in terms of selecting the more important indicators. The performance indicators are increasingly going to be used in, or are being used and will increasingly be used in evaluating the budget bids. And obviously, in terms of the provincial quarterly data that we have on performance, we want to expand that going forward. This is just an example of a performance indicator table from Home Affairs. On reporting and auditing, I think we don't necessarily want to say too much more right now, except perhaps just to point out that obviously Treasury doesn't perform any audits, but we are interested in the subject matter of the auditing of performance information as well as performance audits, but we would do that more in terms of monitoring and evaluation rather than auditing. So in other words, we may also and do also ourselves request information at this stage still sometimes on an ad hoc basis regarding the four E's perhaps and so forth, because we use that information in the budget allocation process, and we also are interested in the results of audits in terms of how they might indicate where there might be some gaps in the guidelines or cases where we need to be a little bit more clear on how things should be implemented by institutions. The things that we're focusing on just very quickly, on program design, we're finding that in some instances it's difficult to get the appropriate indicators, etc., because a program may not be defined in a meaningful way. So for example, there might be two programs in a particular department talking to actually one objective. Then we also obviously will continue to use performance information in the budget allocation process and continue to build the performance information databases.
It's also critical that we try and identify the most relevant performance indicators. And then further enhancement of measurable objectives, obviously, is something that we're mindful of. And then obviously, in terms of exercise which is being conducted, an important one is developing indicators across local government, which is ECLG. It's just important to note that the Joint Budgeting Committee asked for reports to include non-financial information on a more regular basis. Parliament obviously also has a role in terms of enhancing accountability, monitoring the results of performance information and performance audits to feed into the recommendations regarding NSEF allocations. Obviously that's from our point of view specifically, which we would find useful, investigate failure to achieve goals, scrutinize departments, and also importantly, public entities, which also, I might just mention that in terms of the PFMA amendments, public entities will also receive, or the intention is that public entities would receive greater coverage in terms of performance requirements. And obviously also we would welcome Parliament's recommendations regarding improving support reform. I think that's a very useful presentation, particularly the trying, but I think it gives us a useful base to be able to continue. Okay.
Just some clarification. One more time, Secretary, you can go first. The use of terms, to get an understanding of terms, that somehow they kind of use interchangeably at the scene. So the difference between performance indicators, measurable objectives, targets, looking at National Treasury to earn annual report output performance, key performance indicators, you know, that potentially are non-performance. So all these things are coming at us and they all somehow relate. If you use them specifically to how we understand these.
Well, essentially, we shouldn't be conflating terms, and that's essentially what one of the main aims of the framework. The framework talks then of the terms basically that we should be using, and the idea is that we would standardize across performance. The framework doesn't talk about performance indicators. The framework just talks about indicators. Measurable objective is basically just an objective which should be quantifiable but not necessarily quantified. In other words, it should indicate what the strategic intent is of a particular program and say something about how you would assess that. In other words, to say, for example, we would look at the literacy rate and say, you would say that in the objective, but in the actual indicators, you would then probably target, you would then put the literacy rate in as a particular indicator and target that, and then that would be an indicator. So a measurable objective, I don't think, is really intended to be an indicator per se, but it is meant to be expressed in a way in which you can link it to one or maybe even more indicators which would be talking to achieving that particular aim. Targets are simply putting in expected values for a particular indicator. So for example, if I go to, in the projected columns, the last three columns, those are for financial years which have obviously not really taken place yet. So these are all targets. They're not actual.
What we have in the first 3 years is actual figures, and obviously in that current year it was also actual to date. Key performance indicators, you'll notice in the ENE, if you read it closely, that we talked about selected indicators. Key performance indicators, we don't really talk about in the framework, but key performance indicators are sort of the international buzzword or whatever that everyone is kind of used to. We didn't really have a problem with calling this type of indicator table, as you see here, a table of key performance indicators, but then we were worried that might leave the impression that the indicators that you see here, you know, comprehensively cover the business of Home Affairs. And obviously that is something we will be working towards, but given that we're just starting with the implementation of the framework, that's not true at the moment. So we then chose the word selected as opposed to using the word key, which might indicate that these are the most important ones and are comprehensive. So I don't know if I've covered all of them that you asked about, but you are right, and we do need to, in moving forward, clarify that at the point.
I think part of the question is whether they are defined anyway. And the budget documentation that gets given to departments does define these terms. For instance, an indicator tells you that the objective has been met. And the document that comes to me to do it, to fit into the treasury, has got a clear indication of what each term means, so that I can put the right things in that particular place. So the government indicators, the measure of objective, and so on, are defined in the budget document.
What is
the
document?
Sorry?
What is the document? That should be on the website.
The framework that we have here does not make those definitions, but at the beginning of each budget cycle, departments get given budget guidelines, and obviously there will be things that are talk about how do they put together the ENE.
It should be. Let me just make sure that everyone's got the documentation. Some people have got different kinds of documentation. Can we just make sure that it's proper distribution of documents?
This one is entitled Framework for Managing Program Performance Information. It's got a glossary at the end.
Just for clarification, it does give the definitions, and these are the same definitions that we should be confining ourselves to. I don't know if we should be confining ourselves to. But these are the ones that we should use in the context when we're intending to do the relevant business with regard to those. So targets would be in there. The use of the word indicators, but not the word performance indicators. There is, if you read through the detail, I'm not sure it will necessarily be in the glossary, but it's all defined within the document. But then, as I was saying, and that's the point I think that Freeman was trying to make, sometimes in the budget documentation, we talk about others as well, and then but in terms of those, we do clarify them in the budget documentation.
What is the point joint budget committee, Ms. Marbury? Have you received and looked at this document at all? Because I think it might be useful for the joint budget committee to and maybe with SCOAG and ourselves, so to have an attempt to look at it. So the other time we can use also the general budget committee.
Comment and test a question. I'm very happy to see that
know what we're talking about this morning, and that is, you know, everything really begins with a credible budget. If you are now sort of looking to see whether there are programs which are duplicated, you know, to me that's really what it's all about, more effective budgeting and making sure that you start with a proper foundation. So I'm very happy about that. The other more question, which really has somewhat to do with oversight. Treasury, you didn't have people with us when you asked about the hearings, just to see what's going on in the commentary, which is good. To what extent does your department interact with the Auditor General in terms of the audit? If you just look at the audit report, we actually dive deeper and discuss with them the management letters and things like that, because to me, you know, that's very, very fundamental. And I'll tell you why, because, you know, when we look at stuff and we look at the audit report, sometimes it's one page, two pages. It's a very high level stuff, and that's how audits are done. But it's when we actually sit down with the Auditor General, we begin to interrogate, now, why did you say this? Why did you find this? And then we start to unpack it for us, then it becomes actually very significant what, you know, what finding is all about. I was wondering whether Treasury does have that level of interaction with the IT department.
Yes, we have a much more detailed relation with the Auditor General. Can you just explain the process? In the next 2 months, we're going to have a meeting with the Auditor General's office at national, and in some of the provinces, we've got those meetings planned. And the meetings look at the coming audit. We say, what are the issues that have been emerging throughout the year? What are the issues that we think would be issues that must be considered? And so on, Auditor General raises their own views, raise our own views, and also in terms of the interaction. And during the audit process, where issues arise that require that there is clarification, we already have an arrangement with the Auditor General's office that says that those issues will be elevated properly within the Auditor General's office, I think the Premier's office, and Premier will then interact with us, and then we'll interact back with Premier so that we deal with the issue. And we'll limit that to specific cases because we do not want a situation in which we're not available for all of the entities across the country. Because there's 879 entities overall across the country, 526 national and provincial. So we can't be in all of the audit steering committee meetings. But in specific departments, for instance, Home Affairs, Correctional Services, those kind of departments that have got qualifications, we do sit in the audit steering committee meetings that are looking in detail in the audit process and to give input when necessary in those processes. After the audit is concluded, we also again have a review meeting where myself and the Auditor General come together and we look at what transpired from the audit process and what are the challenges that are in, what are the messages that we're picking up from there, and we take the process from there. So there is extensive interaction between the Office of the Auditor General and my office in this regard.
Please stay on the Patrick Bender for today. You know, I'm just looking at performance audits.
Yeah.
And general this discussion. Okay, so we've reached this level. I think that all of us would agree that we've got no problems with the audit performance information. That seems to be, well, that all depends on how National Treasury and the departments get the budgeting process in place, all of those kinds of issues, but I think that we do not, as an oversight committee, see major problems emerging from the Auditor General's office system. We're evaluating government against the understanding. I think the issue that we need, and perhaps as someone put it, the question of performance auditing, we need to crystallize it a little bit more now. Maybe taking the triangle that we saw that National Treasury produced and seeing whether we want to be engaged in the impact in the outcome level. And I don't think we need to discuss that further. I mean, I'm just here a member of staff like that, and they're not participating. They are very valuable people. And if there are issues that any member of staff here wants to bring, this is a general workshop, not a formal meeting. And if you've got got fields of wisdom, which you do have, I know. If you have some comments that you want to make, please feel free to So, is that our understanding, coming out of this meeting here, that we would decide that particular aspect of performance auditing addressed, given the issues raised here? Are there any other methods that anyone else would like to raise?
Okay. Yes. Walker. Advocate Jenkins, our most overworked legal advisor. It's my pleasure. Thank you very much for the opportunity, ma'am. Yeah, I've been listening to the input, and the issue of performance auditing, and then looking at what comes to me is the vision of a department or of government as a whole and so on. I mean, those visions in any case must be guided by the Constitution. These three E's, that's all guided by the Constitution. I think everybody here knows that. So we have a standard there, a sort of a standard, and the Constitution speaks about progressive realization of certain rights, which brings us more specifically to department. I just wanted to throw some issues in the mix, or rather ask questions and give answers at this point, and that, you know, we have a Section 184 report from the Human Rights Commission that must be presented to Parliament annually, which Parliament must then interrogate and use for a specific purpose. So one must look at that and say, are we not duplicating it, or are we not complicating that report already? Of course, from a personal perspective, that report, as I understand it, is not even delivered annually. And there are certain issues about resources to make a good report, also of government departments answering the protocols sent out to them. And those issues are always highlighted in those reports. But what I'm getting to is that if we have a performance audit which comes up with certain conclusions, and we have the Section 184 report from the Human Rights Commission, are those two documents going to be talking to each other, or are they going to actually create confusion within Parliament? Parliament must deal with that.
So I understand that the Human Rights Commission report is significantly around the progressive realization of human rights. It's not a general evaluation, but progressive realization.
Yes.
Okay, that's an important question.
On that point, you know, that to me becomes an indicator. And then just the last point that I want to conclude with, of course, it's for Parliament then to have take action in the sense of having a vote of no confidence either in the President and Cabinet or just in the Cabinet. And that's, we've never had that. And of course, it creates a constitutional crisis in most countries where that happens. But it is there, and one must say, if we're going to have a performance audit and the results do come, if those results are negative and they're based on questionable indicators or questionable criteria, then the whole process, in my opinion, from a legal point of view, is jeopardized. Mm-hmm. So one must actually make sure that you're, as the Audit General said, you must have rock solid foundations when you do come up with a performance audit. And that, I think, is the challenge. But I'm not talking much about rights, and I must stick to the legal and the constitutional issues. But I'll just leave it at that.
I think that rock solid foundation is what we're looking for. Our interest as COAG is to protect the integrity, independence, and reputation of the Auditor General's office. And our interest in performance auditing is to make sure the Auditor General's office is doing the work that is assigned to the office by the Act and by the Constitution, but also to ensure that the way that the Auditor General performs its work doesn't undermine the Auditor General's integrity. And I think this is the issue of the outcomes and the impact that I think is the most worrying for us to learn.
If I just check if we look at the general. I think we might not be, some of us might not be clear on the ability of performance information and performance auditing. When I last visited the subject at the Auditor General's office, performance auditing is a relatively small part of these operations, comprised of a few people who will occasionally, over the course of a year, do a performance audit. specialized enough, like every class, the particular issue, would that be our side of often that the religion is simply, it's going to be part of the operation. But if we look at the Public Audit Act, you know, the section 20 on audit reports, that he must issue an audit report for every audit he does, and then 22C, that in that report, so they're talking about all reports now, so we should have some kind of requirement that goes way beyond performance auditing. That he must report his information relating to the performance of that auditee against predetermined objectives. So the same expected of the audit journey as a matter of routine, of course, across all audits, he must include something on his report. So I think the question to the auditor general, and it can also bring 23 in as well, where it talks about him having to refer to the you know, the economic and efficiency and effectiveness of the resources being used. So ask him whether to do that, is he getting the required information from the department? Does the system give him that information that he can do against predetermined objectives? I'd like to just establish a few clarity in that. But as I said, to me that goes way beyond performance worthy, especially the way that performance is.
That's
the
auditing information.
Just to that, that process is evolving because the phases that we are introducing from year to year that are linked to the readiness of the department to provide information. At the moment, we are clear about the fact that there is no tears of time in the pilot phase is finalized. There probably is no clarity as to how the information that is kept in the department, how that information should be presented in order for it to be auditable. And we can't get to a conclusion phase to say the information in the annual report is agreement with the records unless the records are defined in a particular way. Now, the phase that we should add at the moment is the phase of saying to what extent is the complete compliance with the Treasury guideline, which is at a very simplistic level at the moment, but saying departments must have the clear linkage between their EMEs, their strategic plans, their reporting process, and all that should meet all these matching rules and as defined. So that's what we're looking at the moment. And we've got those criteria in all our reports that are clearly laid out. But at a factual level, we do not get into the depth of the review. As there is guidance and training that is defined there, for instance, to be carried out by somebody and coordinated by National Treasury, and the rollout of this judgment, I can just remember is an expectation that the presentation of information should be standardized in a particular way. Give an example, for instance, when it comes to, let's say, information for legislature, how should the definition of objectives for legislature be defined, and how should it be supported by evidence? Legislation, you know, there to be a particular task. How do you identify the essence of what the legislature should do in order for it to be effective? So there are those complexities, which whatever good in legislation, I get confronted with that question and keep referring them to the Treasury. So I think it is those issues that you talk about. So there's no question of, at the moment, information not being there. It's about what kind of information at what point in time. So it's that rollout phase. But, and I guess it brings us to the point also where we should say, the 2010 target that we're aiming for to be able to make this conclusion, to what extent are we going to be able to achieve that? At the moment, I think pretty much there's no indication that that's not achievable unless some other information does emerge that the rollout process is going to be slower than what we anticipate. All right.
guess it's a long answer to a very short question, but the point is there's no limitation at the moment. It's just a question of the readiness of the department to provide what it's supposed to provide to meet that requirement of the Public Order Act. Chair, the pilot in the four departments will refine and crystallize some of these things, but an interesting statement that I want to make is that it's like when you interview somebody for a job, you interview a person, they tell you what they're going to do to when they get employed, and then when they get employed, they don't perform, and then they tell you they do not have a job description. Departments bid for money to do something, and then when they have to report on what they did with the money, they don't remember what it is that they said they're going to do with the money. I think the broad principles in terms of reporting are there, but to refine them further is something that needs to be considered. But how much further it would go beyond principles is something that we should not underestimate, because you should still keep it at principle level, because the nature of government is such that you've got very different kinds of institutions that have got different businesses, while the objective that they might want to achieve is very similar in terms of a better life for all. But the activities they engage in are very, very different. And when you have to define what each report from a performance information point of view should look like, you're going to only define that best by applying the principles that must be adhered to rather than the specifics. Thank you.
I don't want to be controversial, but this is something that worries me a little about this year, 6-7, in the audit reporting. And I just referred to what Dr. Wiggs referred to in Section 28, which says that these reports must reflect at least, that's the audit report, an opinion or a conclusion on the reported information relating to performance, etc. Now, the nature of the committee, I think, will probably read about 80% of those reports. Now, I have been very disappointed in many instances. You just say we have audited the information. Now, I don't think that's an opinion. It's just a fact. Yes, we've audited. It doesn't say we found it to be adequate or not adequate. In some cases, it does. And then you also find that many of the things that are done by that are outsourced, and I can understand maybe we have this approach because they're not accustomed to it. But they just ignore it completely. They don't even make a comment on that. And I'm just wondering with the feelings, I'm not being critical of this, but I found it a bit frustrating this year. I was trying to find something there and I couldn't find it. There were some, where the audit journal did actually express an opinion.
My understanding of what we've been told here, and there were those of us who were part of the budget reform process, that the ultimate kind of end of the budget reform process was the sophistication of performance reporting and the framework for setting that out. That was my understanding, is that we went through this whole long budget reform process. Now, what we've been told is that there's a pilot project at the moment that is going on, so that you can understand exactly what you're doing. Because, performance reporting can be a devilish thing. Because you choose the wrong indicator, you twist all government resources so that a DG looks good because they're delivering on that particular performance indicator, and it might be the wrong performance indicator. It's not just something that you just put together, it's something that you've got to. I remember when we were dealing with the Australians, in every premier's office, in the Prime Minister's office, there's a special unit that works only on assisting the department to put together their framework. This framework has been going for over 15 years or 20 years, because of the complexities of making sure that you're not just putting nice things there, honey, health, that's the easiest thing to kind of say. And my understanding is that we're in a transitional phase where we're introducing our serious performance reporting and the framework, and this framework. So I'm not sure that you can, and that's what Terence is saying to us, is saying until such time as government is up and ready to provide that information, quality information, once the trade maybe we need to know when the trade is going to finish. The Auditor General's office is at a disadvantage because they cannot be auditing against that information.
I understand all of that, and I know it's a process, work in progress. I know we've been talking about this for some time now. Now, but what I'm saying is that you've got what I've read here, you've not given opinion. If I were to do that, and I've got there, and I did this audit of this information, and I found it was actually meaningless, because wasn't done properly, then that would be my thing. Maybe I'm wrong, maybe I'm not reading correctly, but and then my question was going to be, are we going to see, you know, some improvement in 208?
The way we communicate is, and I think it's important, in the next meeting we're going to have with GOEC, where we're going to be presenting the audit directives. That is where we're explaining which approach we'll be adopting in any 1 year to audit government on AOPI. And we're not yet at the stage of providing or giving conclusions. We're not there yet. And that statement is kind of going to be made in the audit and the reason. That's why we're targeting 2010 for that eventuality. If the progress on the pilot program is going to go ahead.
I'm comfortable with that, but what we get from our briefing session is where I want to say, what this means.
Local government. performance reporting. Who's responsible for that? Is the National Treasury? Is it who?
There are aspects of this that relate directly to the role that the Treasury plays, but sometimes there's conflict between what the PhD does, because the Municipal Assistance Act and so on came earlier and gave the PhD certain things that are actually naturally the Treasury's role. So sometimes there are those conflicts, but in as far as the MFMA is concerned, there are delegations that have been made. And I think about 20 municipalities are the role of National Treasury, and the rest of the municipalities are devolved to provinces. So there is a role that is played by the province, and there's a role that is played by National Treasury. And the 20 odd municipalities that are the role of the Treasury. Mainly, yes.
So is anyone dealing with the smaller municipalities in terms of developing their framework for reform?
The development of the reporting framework is a centralized role, but the implementation and support is devolved in terms of the delegation. But the framework, because the framework has to be similar, is developed centrally. To the extent that framework comes from Treasury, it's developed by National Treasury.
Which ministry is responsible for the implementation of that framework for municipalities other than those over which you go?
And I will say I speak under correction here because of the confusion I referred to. To the extent that the framework emanates from the Treasury, we take full responsibility. In practice, and if you look at Project Consolidate, there are areas where you would have thought this is the Treasury role, where you find the PLG playing a role. But to the extent that the framework emanates from the Treasury takes full responsibility for its implementation.
Okay.
Yes, you can. I think I'm having one question which is directed to Treasury. I'm just trying to check within government institutions whether they have any assessment structures that continuously assess the performance management system within their organization. And if then they have such a structure, how effectively and capacitated they are, because I think that is one of the instruments that we can also use in the whole issue of the evaluation and assessment of the performance management system within government departments, far before the intervention of the Auditor General for the independent opinion of the Parliament and the public.
Again, I think if we look performance in terms of service delivery, you wouldn't necessarily expect the Treasury to be the one that plays a role in that. But if you think of performance in terms of managing the resources at the disposal of the department, then naturally you would expect the Treasury to play a role. Do we do that assessment? A direct answer to that is that we do not have the capability to do that at the moment. But we're developing a tool that we can utilize maybe biannually and get a service provider to help us do that kind of an assessment. At the moment, we rely solely on the report of the Auditor General, because the Auditor General has got sufficient resources to interact with all of these stakeholders. And from the report of the Auditor General, we are able to get sufficient information, or at least useful information, that helps us make the assessment of the capability of each of the institutions. We're developing a tool to implement. And in the next 2 years, we'll be implementing that tool.
What about an in-house performance measurement in each part?
The tool will assist each department. They can do their own assessments using utilizing that tool. But we'll also, because we want to be able to have credible information, we want to use that tool ourselves to get a sense of what is happening. But that's the intention of the tool.
Okay. I think we're reaching the conclusion. I don't think we can do much point in discussing. I think we discussed most of the issues. I just want to look at also culture, which I think is a useful document to have, because the petition wasn't here to present on. But on her last page, she makes certain recommendations. that third bullet has got a lot in it, that third bullet from the bottom, but also the support at highest levels of government. It's very good to see the relationship between the Auditor General's office and National Treasury. And I think there's one role player that's not in this, and that's the President's office with very monitoring capabilities as well. And at some stage, I think there needs to be an engagement with the President's office just around, you know, once we reach finalization around this, just so that that particular unit of that monitoring is more involved on what is happening. Because maybe in the early looking of monitoring, once again, you're going to have concept of reporting as it were. That I think then brings to a conclusion. I know if there are any other matters that anyone would like to raise. Yes, Karen.
Okay, I don't know what I'm jumping the gun. I think having a meaningful discussion of today, it can be important given the input, the reservation, concerns, and as well as the observations made in the room to say how do we take this thing forward? Because for us, I think it's important that the rollout and the phasing in of personal audit is continuing to be uppermost in our minds. At the moment, we're sort of working solo within the office. Our consultation is not as robust as it's supposed to be. And perhaps if we can define some form of a consultation process when it comes to defining the scoping of the personal audit, that would really help. I mean, help us.
You have already mentioned the APAC. The impact structures as well. Well, you're wanting us to talk about the relevant role players and how you get the stakeholder dialogue. Is that really what you're wanting us to talk about? How we move in that process?
Yes, Chair, and the prerequisite to comment any particular type of what we call it. But I think the discussion here, especially given that the pyramid is a clear indication that there are things we cannot touch as auditors on that certain things are in place.
Well, I would like to suggest that conceptually, the way forward would be is that the auditor and people that directly, the auditor performance information should go full steam ahead. I don't think we have conceptual problems with that, and that's in terms of the Act. And I think that is the major issue that stakeholders want. They want to know if government departments are delivering as they have promised. So I would say that would be, and I would imagine that would be the least contentious. I do say, though, that it would be important that the President's Office, the monitoring unit, and we could be assisted in finding out what that exact unit, just be involved in this, just so that there's an understanding of that we're moving in that direction and that there's feedback in that way. The second issue around reporting. The economy and efficiency, I don't agree with any of your comments on those issues. I think what we would want to know is exactly what we are meaning by economy and efficiency, because the two are very difficult to disentangle, and often it's just one thing. But I think we would need more input exactly, and I think this is almost like a case study. Just take a simple case study and take us through how you would be reporting from an economy and efficiency point of view. Okay. Does that make sense to you? Is that clear? Just so that we get a taste of what that kind of reporting would be. We cannot ignore effectiveness, because that is part of the mandate that has been given to us. But I think when we look at what was envisaged initially around effectiveness, when we start straying into the policy domain, I think that is our greatest challenge. And I think we need to think around the issue of what is manageable for the Auditor General's office around the issue of that will not potentially jeopardize the independence, standing, integrity, and generally, you know, the reputation of the Auditor General's office. given that we need something absolutely beyond which we need to be auditing. So I think we need to be looking around the effectiveness when it relates to the impact and the outcomes related issues. What are we going to be meaning by effectiveness? If it's not going to be related to those two particular things in the triad. Could we just do a, is it in the mandate? Effectiveness is there. And I mean, in terms of international auditing standards, it's there as well, and equity as well.
In the mandate, it relates to the procurement.
Yeah.
It specifically relates to procurement. It's efficiency, effectiveness, and economy relating to procurement.
I think that we need to go back to our constitutional mandate, our mandate in terms of the Public Audit Act, any other relevant legislation to see what mandate is imposed upon us in terms of effective reporting. And then to think around this issue. If there is not a strict mandate, I would say that we pull back on this until we get all these other reporting and it's a huge task before us. For that to be revisited at a later stage. But I think it would be also interesting to see what other Auditor General's offices are doing around effectiveness reporting, because you obviously have gained your mandate from international best practice. And we need to know which countries are implementing that is comparable to our country, all of those types of things. So I think that is the issue that needs interrogation. Gavin? Well, maybe if you could forward via Darwood that opinion onto the Auditor General's office, that seems to confirm what we're saying, and that the Auditor General's office should consider itself up to the level of output. But if the Auditor General's office does have another view, we want to hear it, but we need to have a very considered view around that. Okay. So that's from a conceptual point of view that we would say, performance information auditing, go ahead. I think we need to know how you will synchronize with what National Treasury is doing, what the rollout period is going to be. I think we need to get to the Treasury involved. The second issue that I think we need to know is who are the role players that are the equivalent of National Treasury when it comes to DPOs or when it comes to municipality and provinces. Where are the lacunae in the role that National Treasury is playing? If we can just have that so that we have a good minute. So that's a conceptual framework. I think where you've got to be taking this kind of discussion is, let's get this conceptual framework thought about within a certain time frame. And then we've got to take it to the APAC, a special APAC, where we have the scope of present at the FAR budget committees and finance committees in other provinces, and in those various zones. But we also need some critical role players from the presidency, from the DPLG, from National Treasury as well. Eddie?
No, just on the APEC, I'm a little bit I know that we had the resolution, we had quite a long discussion on the performance information, but now the next conference is going to be this year, probably October, and I mean, I think this committee has been invited to participate. We haven't, it was still suggested.
Too far ahead. No, this
business has got to be completed. Okay, well, there needs an executive committee of ASDAC,
yeah,
which is supposed to follow up on the resolution,
I
think.
I don't understand.
And
then
you need to find what is the
status
of the
follow-up. Well, I think
it's worth having a just in the process. We should write to them and say, what, you know, what is the status of the follow-up on the resolution?
Okay.
No, just regular.
Okay.
Yeah, you're right.
But it's just a consultation process if
you
get the major stakeholders. I also think that the chairpersons of the committee, so I would imagine, unless the Auditor General has any other views of who should be involved in this process, obviously the executive engagement becomes important, and I imagine that would happen through National Treasury. Any other critical role comes to the reaction?
I think I'm happy if Treasurer is coordinating with the pro players on the liability side, because they do fall within that Treasurer's framework. But on the local government front, it is maybe important to them to look at the DPLG, so that gap is also closed. But other than that, I think on the legislative side, I think this forum today has been able to bring all the critical roles and get it to APEC and other portfolio committees that happen nationally.
Okay, so I think that what we would envisage is and maybe we need to sit and discuss with your office, just the program of how this would be rolled out. We don't want to sit and discuss the same thing. Do we have a workshop which would never be worked in my mind? And do we have smaller events where we engage people with stakeholders and they can talk? I think maybe if we could meet with your office and look at that kind of rollout plan. Does that interest you?
Yeah,
that
sounds good.
I take it that all this is pretty on the fact that now that there's clarity on what the distinction is between the two, which was the apples of today's session, we can now go ahead with the discussion paper, knowing that there will be confusion in
I think you very well showed us the difference between the two. And now we just need the refinement of the form of that paper. And then once that paper is produced, then we have the necessary consultation and work out the format of that consultation, how to take place in this movement and how in consultation with your office.
Just in relation to that point, Chair, on the rollout of the program, are we looking to when Parliament arises towards the end of this year in terms of the timing of all of this, in terms of concluding it with the current program?
I would say that your deadline must be by September. I would imagine Parliament would be ready after June. You know, this is the program in 2020. Parliament is rising early.
If you look at the program that ours has given us, in fact, in the third and fourth quarter, we're only going to be sitting here for 2 weeks. There will be committees.
Election mode will start by November, and then you won't get any sensible comment from anybody. Not that you get much sensible comment from politicians or anybody, but election mode. Is September manageable? If we can do it even before that, it would be useful.
Okay. Just one comment. You mentioned inviting the chairperson to the committee. I think the internet is used to make sure that it's not particularly silent, because I think we do all the lot of work on the municipality. The monitoring there is really vital, and that's one option that we can do.
Particularly the select committee on finance. That is almost the equivalent of our joint budget committee. Yes,
I would think, ma'am, on that point, residents of staff that sit in the NCOC would also be asked to do something like that.
Okay.
Yeah, this book that Gavin has just received, I think it's very helpful.
Well, actually, I'm not being funny. I actually think it's very useful. Is it available in textbook stores or what? Okay, well, everyone will go to Amazon and get it. And you can see a hard and thin to buy.
That's
exactly. Can Dal just get the details of the book and then he can email everybody with the details? Yes, and then
you can maybe with that. Karen? Sure, I'm going to have a chat with you on this one, but Intel has got standards on auditing and personal auditing. And that's an authoritative reference point for personal audit. We test the book against those people.
Yeah, are you dealing with auditors? Yeah. Okay, now what is the time? If you want one of Parliament's railway luncheons, you can go next door to Mark's building and you'll get a free lunch. I'm sure it's